Now, are you all listening? This is Radio 2. Oh dear, I can't cope. I wasn't cut out to be a BBC announcer.
Get on with it, you bum pup.
It's all right for you. I haven't started me cleaning yet. I've 3 weeks ironing to do, 4 days washing up and a meal to make for 12 people.
So what's new?
Oh, all I've got in the fridge is half a rotten cabbage, 2 table tennis balls and a tea bag.
Look, you old crow, just read what's written on the flipping strips.
Oh dear. Right. This is Radio 2. The BBC are proud to present Someone in the Grumbleweeds. Get the old bag off and cue the music. Oh, I can't go.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. A thousand thank yous, ladles and jelly spoons. And welcome to our Ugba Lickle show.
Every flipping week he says that.
I know. I'm trying to make it into a catchphrase.
Don't let him upset you, old gaffer.
Hey, don't bother me, rat face. I'm thick-skinned.
Well, you're half right.
Sticks and stones may break my bones, but rhubarb's cheaper on a Monday.
What's all that about, old lad?
That's just one of me old granny's sayings.
Oh, no, not his old granny again.
Old granny rubbish were full of pearls of wisdom.
From what I've heard, she were full of cooking sherry.
Whosoever wandereth across the desert of life will get sand in his cocoa.
Aye, brilliant, that. Yes.
The weary man who walks in the shade of the jacaranda tree has probably lost his holiday money.
How very true.
I think I'll go get a video out.
Feareth not the leaping frog, for he who sniffs the flower of life will never want for porridge.
That gets you right there, that, doesn't it?
I don't tell you what it gets me.
You know, it must be marvellous to be a literary genius.
Aye. She was in front of her time.
She should have been in front of a 57 bus. Pack it in rubbish. You're a pain in a flipping neck.
Pity the man who mocketh, for even though he walks in the path of wisdom, he that piles up an abundance of riches will be as a grain of rice, even though somewhere over the rainbow we'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, though the raindrops keep falling on your head. If you can help somebody as you pass along, you'll never walk through a storm on a Friday.
No, this is all we need. These two bird brains, Kylie and Jason.
I hope you weren't talking about us when you said bird brains.
Exactly. Because Ernest and me are anything but. Do you realise that my friend here...
He means me.
I mean him. Do you realise he's on the brink?
He's been on the brink for years.
He is on the brink of his greatest ever achievement.
Here, hang on a minute. What's this greatest ever achievement all about, then?
Well, I am going to tackle the Cresta Run.
That's incredible.
No, it's in Switzerland.
About this Cresta Run job, what sort of sledge is he using, like?
Sledge? What are you talking about, sledge? What's he want a sledge for?
Well, how's he going to go down the Cresta Run if he ain't got a flipping sledge?
Oh, come on. Oh, I'm not that ignorant. Use your brains. Cresta Run. It's a run. I'm going to run down there.
Well, you prawn. You go down the crest and run on a sledge.
Oh, the other one. If they'd intended you to go down the crest and run on a sledge, they'd have called it the crest of sledge.
But you can't run down it, you dork. It's solid flipping ice.
You mean it's slippy?
It's solid ice.
Did you hear that, Geoffrey? It's slippy.
That could be dangerous, Ernie.
You might fall and twist your ankle.
If he falls down there, he'll break every bone in his body.
Oh, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Does this mean, like, that you're giving up the idea of going down the crest to run, even on a stretch?
Well, put it this way. He's only just taken the stabilizers off his bike. Guess that was a three-wheeler.
What about a four-man bob?
I beg your pardon.
I said, what about a four-man bob?
Where can we find four men called Bob? I don't know, Ennis, but it sounds interesting.
It's a bobsleigh, a bump, or a sleigh.
You're joking. If Ernest won't do it, we'll never get a reindeer down there.
No, don't worry.
No, forget it. He'll tackle something else. Mm-hmm.
Tell him to answer the door.
But there's no one at the door.
You won't be told, will you?
Look at the time. That'll be this week's guest. Hurry up. Let's have a quick tidy-up.
A quick tidy-up? You'll need a gang of navvies and a dumper truck.
Oh, dear. It'll have to do. Open the door up first.
Yes? Can I help you?
You can. Get me a dust rag and some metal polish. This doorbell's filthy. And look at the state of this hallway. It's knee-deep in muck.
Well, who's it right first?
Oh, it's that famous lady actress of films and television and dustpan and mop. It's Miss Sarah Heard!
Oh, Miss Heard, what an unexpected and wonderful surprise. Welcome to our humble little home.
Home? You call this place a home? It's more like an inflated bin bag with windows. It's a disgrace. It's a midden. And what's that great big hairy dog doing on the sofa?
If it's all the same to you, like, I'm having a kip.
And just look at the muck on this mantelpiece. You could grow potatoes on this mantelpiece.
Excuse me, don't wipe it off, Miss.
Why not?
We're growing potatoes on it.
Well, the sooner you get stuck into this place and get it cleaned up, the better. You, bucket.
Oh, I couldn't touch a bucket without my rubber gloves on.
I said bucket.
Oh, yes, Miss Heard. Oh, she's dominating, Jeffrey.
You, hot water.
Yes, Miss Heard.
And you, carbolic.
Just watch it.
Now, where's your vacuum cleaner?
It's going to be repaired.
Where?
Leningrad.
Leningrad?
Yes, you see, the fella who had the little shop round the corner opened a branch in Leningrad.
For crying out loud, admit it. We've never had a rotten vacuum cleaner.
I might have known. I dread to think what the rest of the house is like.
Look, Mr. When we invited you to come on our humble little show, it wasn't to clean the house up.
We wanted you to play the leading part in a mammoth spectacular production what only a lady actor of your unique talent and experience could cope with.
Oh, really? Well, how very charming. Now, it is true, of course, I have played some very important parts in the theatre in my time.
Oh, that's where we picked you, see.
And what exactly was it that you had in mind for me?
Withering Heights.
Withering Heights? That's a block of high-rise flats.
Get it right, for crying out loud. It's Withering Heights by Emily Bronte.
Yes. The Bronte sisters.
No. He's Uncle Rubbish. He's Uncle Nasty.
She means the Bronte sisters who wrote all those famous books. Oh. They were famous writers.
And singers. My favourite was Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree with Nobody Else But Me.
Blimey, she's as deaf as they are. Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte.
Oh, of course. How silly of me. I was thinking of the one who married Billy Wright. Might I ask which part you have in mind for me?
The young and beautiful, the ravishing and the fascinating, the voluptuous and thrilling Catherine Earnshaw.
I'm definitely going to get a video out.
Hang on a minute, lads. Isn't that the part for a young girl in her early 20s?
Do you mean to tell us that you're not in your 20s?
Well,
I think I'll get bite the bullet.
Well, I have to admit, I am just a little over 20.
You could be done for speeding.
But look, do you see this mop handle? He's getting right up my nose, he is.
It would be a privilege to appear in the play with you, Miss Heard.
Then I'll do it on one condition.
I don't see any problems. What might the condition be?
That all three of you scruffy-looking lot get into the bath this very minute and clean yourselves up. Now, come on, shut up.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are privileged and proud honoured in the extreme to present to you the great British listening public the true life story of one of the most incredible men this country of ours has ever produced.
A man who has astounded the world with his extraordinary and astonishing exploits.
A man not given to boasting or bragging about his adventures.
A man whose true life story will make you sit up and say,
I think I'll go get a video out. This is going to be dead, rotten, boring. I can smell it a mile off. Dead, rotten, boring.
You couldn't be more wronger. This is the true story of one man's life that is anything but boring.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, we present for the first time ever on radio the hitherto unpublished, undisclosed diaries of the great Fred Fibber. Mr. Fibber, could you tell us, in your own words, something about the astonishingly brave and courageous happenings of August the 29th, 1920, as related in your diaries and exclusive to us?
No. I could not tell you about the astonishingly brave and courageous happenings of August the 29th, 1920, as related in my diaries and exclusive to you.
Oh.
You see, if I were to tell you about the astonishingly brave and courageous happenings of August the 29th, 1920, as related in my diaries and exclusive to you, not only would folks say, A-Up is high again with his fairy tales, he does nothing but boast and brag, he makes it all up and you can't believe where he stands, but also, I would be betraying the one principle in the world that I hold dearest. The Official Secrets Act, affiliated and verbatim.
Ah, we understand, Mr. Fibber. We won't bother you any further.
What happened was, it was a day I won the World Heavyweight Sumo Wrestling Championship by beating previous World Heavyweight Sumo Wrestling Champion, Mad Harry Chiang, in straight sets.
That couldn't have been easy, Mr. Fibber. Because these Japanese sumo wrestlers, you know, they're enormous.
Mad Harry Chiang with 35 and a half stones in his stocking feet.
Hang on a minute, Bolt. Just put the brakes on there. You're trying to tell us that you beat a 35 and a half stone sumo wrestler.
That is a documented fact. And it's also true as well.
And you weigh about what? 7 stones?
No. 6 stone, 13 pounds.
This'll be good. How did you manage to beat a man that size, Fibber?
I'll tell you, Clever Clogs, and put the record straight once and for all.
What a man.
We were both in circle, what they're fighting. He were in his half, squatting on his haunches and trying to look menacing. I were in my half, eating a bag of chips.
Come off it,
that's right, that's right.
What did you do then, Mr. Fibber?
Well, he took a step towards me. I finished my chips and took a step towards him. As he lunged, I shoved 2 chips up his nostrils. Heavily laced with vinegar.
Sure, genius.
What then? Quick as a flash, I dived between his legs and undid the knot holding up his loincloth. Quickly retying it with a double sheep shank sliding granny shackle half its ripped sleeve knee knot. And then I pulled it tight. He let out a blood curdling scream, fell to the floor with his eyes watering, and vinegar running out of his nose. And yelling at the top of his voice, flipping ecky, flipping ecky. That were in Japanese, of course, you know what I mean?
Now, where's the champion? What a man.
The biggest lot of codswallop I've ever heard.
How is it, Paul? Well, the British nation was so proud of me that day in 1920 that Prime Minister himself sent me a fax message.
Hold it, Fibber. you received a fax message in 1920.
That is 100% correct and totally accurate.
A fax message in 1920.
Absolutely.
And what did this message say, Fibber?
It said, congratulations, Fred. You are the first man in the world to receive a fax message 60 years before they were invented.
I wonder if there's any money in piano tuning.
Anyway, I'll go now, lads. There's aeroplane waiting outside for me. I'm going for 33,000 feet, 3-4 record in half an hour. Don't forget to put your parachute on, Fred. Who said anything about wearing a parachute, eh? Ta-da, lads, I'll see you.
What a man.
Excuse me, boys. Oh, by the way, I hope you don't mind me calling you boys. They're cracking 50 if they're a day.
Not at all, Miss Hurd.
No, it's just that I have to be back home for Christmas, so I thought that the sooner we get this disaster, this magnificent work of dramatic art over and done with, the sooner I can summer lift back to London.
Look, let's do this load of garbage. Let's get rid of her and let's get home.
Tell me, did you get a refund?
From what?
The charm school.
Well, I hope we can do it soon. I'm ever so excited because we're doing the sound effects, aren't we, Geoffrey?
We are, Ernie. Oh, I've been clutching onto my coconut shells all day.
Well, lucky you.
For crying out loud, let's do it.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, the play What You Are About to Hear is brought to you by a kind permission of MGM.
More grumbleweed muck.
The part of Nellie has been taken at short notice and she's still looking for it.
The scene is set in a lonely house on the Yorkshire Moors. The time is 1835.
That's 25 to 7.
Don't start.
We are proud to bring you one of the most moving, most tragic love stories of ever and ever.
This play was such a success, it was taken out on the road
and put in front of a number 57 bus. Get on with it.
Ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourself for a unique theatrical experience.
Oh, Ernest, I can't wait.
Oh, get your hands off me coconut shell. As we present Withering Ice.
Lights, camera, action, put the key under the mat, and cue music.
Oh, I don't reckon much to that music. Haven't you got any Barry Manilow?
I don't think he was born in 1835, Miss Hurd.
He should have been. Cut the rotten music.
Ooh, well, we like Barry Manilow, don't we, Geoffrey?
We do, Ernest. All except his nose.
Oh, yes, yeah. You're right, his nose.
You could open a tin of salmon with that nose, don't you?
We like his songs, though. His songs. When he sings, the air stand up on the back of his legs.
Yes, especially when he sings that cocker banana.
Oh, yes. Her name was Lola. She was a showgirl. And she worked at the cocker banana.
Now, look. Are we going to do this play or not? Because I could be at home pickling eggs.
I think I'll get a video out.
I don't think they do a video on pickling eggs.
Ladies and gentlemen, Withering Ice, lights, camera, action, thank you.
I am the young and beautiful, the ravishing and fascinating, the voluptuous and thrilling Catherine Earnshaw. What's he laughing at? Look, I'll land you one in a minute.
Ignore him, Miss Adams.
Well, that won't be difficult.
Ladies and gentlemen, Withering Ice, lights, camera, action, thank you.
I am seated at the doorway of our home on the wide Yorkshire moors. The wild Yorkshire moors.
Ernest, the wind.
Oh, I'll get your tablet, Geoffrey.
The sound effect, you fighter.
Oh, sorry, wind coming up.
I am seated in the doorway of our home on the wild Yorkshire moors, awaiting the return of my father from Liverpool. They've been playing Leeds United in the third round of the FA. Now, who wrote this rubbish?
Just carry on, Miss Sherd. It's brilliant.
I felt fair clemmed. I was waiting for Frieda the maid to bring me my afternoon tea. Frieda, get a move on with that tea.
I'm coming. Oh, do you have to shout? I've only got one pair of hands, you know. Oh, I can't cope. I just can't cope. It's Frieda do this and Frieda do that. No wonder I'm on tablets. Oh, I haven't stopped since 5:30 this morning. My bunions are giving me jip. And my toes look like a bunch of radishes.
Well, elbow the tea, Frieda. Here comes Edgar Linton, our rich neighbour, what is an unmarried bachelor without a wife and who is madly in love with me and likes me a bit. Sometimes. Oh, this is the pathetic.
Catherine.
Edgar.
Catherine.
Edgar.
Edgar.
Catherine. Shall we start again?
As I came across the moors, I gathered you some wild woodbines.
I don't believe this next line.
Couldn't you get me any craven egg?
See what I mean?
Catherine, you are the most beautiful captivating...
No, hang on a minute. Why is your voice changed?
Me and Uncle Rubbish have changed parts. You see, he's decided he'd rather play Heathcliff.
No. I suppose it's called job sharing.
Catherine, you are the most beautiful, captivating, radiant, gorgeous, elegant, graceful and refined woman what I have ever clapped eyes on. Alas, I cannot stay.
Where are you going?
The optician's.
Oh, here comes my father galloping across the moors on brown vest.
With me coconut shells. Someone's pinched me coconut shells.
You're sticking on them, Ernie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, silly me.
Well done, Bess.
Well done. Next time, get a horse. My back's killing me.
Father, you returned from your journey with a stranger.
Ah, I met him wandering the walls looking for work. I brought him back to do a bit of labouring for me. His name is... Heathcliff. And his orchestra.
I gazed at the stranger. My hands trembled. He was 6'2", black curly hair, smouldering eyes, flashing white teeth, of magnificent build, and one of the most rugged, handsomest creatures I had ever set eyes upon. When he spoke, I felt a strange weakness come over me. So you're Heathcliff.
Upham.
Our eyes met.
Oh, Ernest. How did you do that?
I didn't really know. I just banged these two things together here.
That must have hurt you.
Is this your first visit to this part of the world, Heathcliff?
Upham.
Well, I have business needs tending, Catherine. Show Heathcliff around his new surroundings.
Yes, Father.
Oh, I nearly forgot. I brought you back a present.
Oh, Father. Look at what my father has brought me, Heathcliff.
It's an hairnet.
Yes. I had to throw the other one away. It was full of holes. Which Christmas cracker did they get that out? Heathcliff, I hope you don't mind sleeping in the hayloft.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Not that you'll get that much sleep.
Why's that, my lady?
Well, I sleep there as well. Oh, what strong, hairy arms.
Yes, I like a woman with strong, hairy arms.
You must be tired after your journey. Rest your weary head on my bosom. He can't even spell it.
Oh, that's nice, that is. Proper lovely. Hey.
What?
I can hear the tide coming in.
A As the weeks and months passed, our love grew into a wild, frenzied, and uncontrollable passion. It was an untamed and careless love. We ran barefoot through the heather. I broke my ankle. Then one day, Heathcliff was sent on a long journey by my father. I was heartbroken at the thought of him leaving. I flung my bedroom window open and called him as he set off across the wild moors. Heathcliff! Heathcliff! Come back, Heathcliff! Heathcliff, come back!
Where's Cathy?
You've forgotten to put your trousers on! But heartbreak was closing in on us. The time had come to tell Heathcliff about Edgar and my father's plan for us to marry. When I broke the news to him, I was stunned by the anger, the fury, the crazed violence of his reply. His knuckles were white as he clenched his fists. He towered above me and said, Then came the day I had been dreading. Doing this show. No, sorry. The day I had been dreading, Edgar had arrived and Heathcliff was with me and Father. It is a day that will be forever branded on my memory. A meeting I shall never forget.
Heathcliff! Edgar! Heathcliff!
Edgar!
Catherine! Frieda!
Heathcliff!
Father!
Edgar!
Catherine!
No, hang on a minute. Heathcliff!
Father!
Edgar! No! Frieda!
Father!
No!
Frieda!
No!
Terry Wogan! Oh, I can't cope with this. I just can't cope. Where's my tablets?
Frieda!
What?
She's Frieda, you Wally.
I'm not. And who's this Wally when he's at home?
I couldn't give a monkey's who's Wally, who's Frieda, who's Heathcliff, who's Catherine, or who's Edgar. Because I'm clapped out.
I've forgotten who I'm supposed to be now.
Well, you can be Donald Flipping Duck for all I care. Look, do you know something? I have never been involved in such a shambles in all my life. And you think I turned down a chance to have green guns fall over me on Carrie? I know I did. What happened to the plot?
What's she talking about?
Well, it's beyond me, old lad.
They never have a rotten plot.
Look, couldn't we get Emily Bronte on the phone?
Talk sense, you duck egg.
Ah, oh, you're right, Uncle Nasty. She's probably ex-directory.
Well, what's her fax number?
It'll be Howarth something or other, won't it?
That's another guest you've insulted. There's only one thing we can do here.
What's that?
Start from the beginning and do it right.
Oh, no, you don't.
Why not? It's still light.
You're not going to do that because I've got something very important to say.
What's that, Miss Ed?
You have been listening to someone and the Grumbleweeds. Graham, Morris and Robin were the Grumbleweeds, and me, Paul Hurd. I used to be the mother of Mother's Pride, you know. And was someone. The show was written by Eddie Braben and Mike Craig, and the whole thing was altered, mucked about, changed over and produced by Mike Craig. And there's only one thing I can say now that this experience is behind me. Praise be.